Welcome to yet another exciting season of Sisters in Conversation, the podcast. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On this podcast, I profile women of color in the legal profession in an attempt to celebrate their contribution to the profession. We journey through their individual stories of perseverance and resilience and overcoming challenges like imposter syndrome, racism, and sexism, to name a few. I hope you're geared up for what promises to be another insightful, informative, and empowering season. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast. Welcome to another conversation of Sisters in Conversation. I am Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm joined by Advocate Itumeleng Kekana, who is an advocate and got her LLB from the University of South Africa. Welcome to the show, Dumi. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. How are you doing, Law?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, offline you were talking about how you were at the Tamia concert. I'm very jealous of you, but thank you. That really reminds me that a lot of the time we work hard and we play hard.
Yes, definitely. You know, it's always good to have that balance of working and going out and relaxing. So it's something that I do. I think most people that follow me realize that it's not all work for me. It's either I'm out with my kids or I'm out with my partner, but I always do something to strike the balance between working and having time to myself and going out and having fun.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. All right, Dumi, as we usually do with all our guests on the show, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Take us to the very beginning. Who is Itumeleng? Where were you born and raised? Where did you attend primary school? And then we will touch on why you decided to pursue a profession or a qualification in law.
All right. Okay. So I'm Advocate Itumeleng Kekana. I'm an admitted advocate of the High Court of South Africa. I'm originally from Polokwane, Limpopo. I matriculated at Tegzila Secondary School, which is a Muslim high school. So I used to wear pants and this dress on top, and we used to cover everywhere besides our head and faces. So, and then following my matric, I came to Gauteng to pursue to further my studies. I applied at the University of Johannesburg. I had my matric results, and I told the admission lady, I'm here. Then she said to me, but you don't qualify, your results are not good.
Sure.
My heart was so sad. I cried. And bear in mind, I came to Joburg alone, not with my dad, not with my mom, just me alone. So, and then I met up with my uncle this side, who was married to my aunt. We're not even that close. We don't know each other. I'm there crying. I didn't get in. And that's the only university I applied at. I'm there crying. I didn't know what to do. And I called home. I'm like, Mom, they said I don't qualify. My results are low. Even though I passed with the B, I still don't qualify. What do I do? And she says, just come home. Come home, you'll upgrade, and then you'll try again next year. What? Well, I cried even more. Sure. My peers are all excited. Exactly. My peers are all excited. They got into the selective universities. It's just me now. Then my uncle says, you know what, there's a college in Sandton, let's go try that out. I'm like, okay, we catch a bus, we go to Sandton, we get there, it's Varsity College. They see the results, and she says, no, you can qualify for law at UNISA, which was originally applied for law at No, I applied for, what did I apply for again at UJ? I think radiology, and my second option was law. Then she says, "What did you apply for, UJ?" I tell her, "This is what I applied for. My second option was law." She says, "You qualify for law at UNISA. Let's apply. But what you have to do is, because UNISA starts in the second semester and we've already started and they've already started for the first semester, you're going to have to do a bridging course at Varsity College." Home, I inform my parents, "This is what I have to do." My mom is like, "Okay, if you're happy with it, you can apply and you can start your studies." So that's how I got into law. I started studying at Varsity College in Sandton through UNISA. It was going well at first until, and I used to travel from Bromfontein to Sandton by bus. So I used to wake up very early. That's where the discipline of self-studying started for me. Because remember, I had to go to high school, it was every day. I had to go to class every day. So now I'm in varsity. Some days I don't go to class and it's long distance learning. How do I strike a balance? How do I self-discipline? My parents are not with me now. So waking up, catching the bus, going to Sandton, that's where my self-discipline of, okay, now I have to be an adult came in. But now the adulting became too much when I started partying a lot. I started going out with friends. My marks was showing that I was doing all those things. I started failing. I started failing to my law. My parents would ask for the results. They check. No, this, I'm dropping. My marks are dropping. Then my mom said, "You know what?" Sorry. My mom said, "You need to come home now because you're failing. It seems like you don't know why you went to your work in the first place." Hello, again, I started crying. Listen, me, I cry a lot. Lot. If I'm happy, if I'm sad, I cry. I cried and I said to my mom, "You know what? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move to Pretoria. I'm going to be closer to UNISA and I'm going to get my results back to what they were when I started studying." She said, "Okay, it's fine." I came to Pretoria. I was closer to UNISA. I was closer to the lecturers. And I became bored because I was self-studying. I was studying at Sandton, at Varsity College. Now I'm self-studying. There's no tutors, there's no classes, there's nothing. I have to do everything by myself. That's why it's so important for UNISA students to have self-discipline development. UNISA is very difficult because unlike other universities, we don't have classes. We don't have access to, we do have access to our lecturers, but sometimes they don't respond to our emails.
Sure.
You have to do everything by yourself. You literally have to do everything by yourself. So I moved to Pretoria. I became bored and I sat and tried to figure out what next. What do I do? How do I keep myself busy? I started applying for vet work. I got vet work. I think every June and December I would work. I would do vet work. I eventually, I think it took me 5 years. Yes, it took me 5 years to complete my degree. A 4-year degree took me 5 years because of all the partying, which is a lesson, a very hard lesson I had to learn. I then matriculated. Following matriculation, sorry, following graduation, what happened? I didn't. I was jobless. Again, I became bored. I cried. I'm done. I need a job. What do I do? My articles, no one is taking. I'm not getting anything. I'm not securing my articles. So I applied to do my PLT. I did my PLT at the University of Pretoria. While doing my PLT, I secured my articles at Mpilane Associates, which then I again the balance between working and studying. So now they expected us to leave work at 6, and I had to rush to do my, to rush to class to do the PLT. It was so difficult. I don't even want to lie, like striking that balance. But it became easy as time went by because I gained the self-discipline that I had from studying at UNISA. So then I, during my articles, before I finished, then I fell pregnant. Mm. And I had to resign and pursue a different route now. Mm. I then got admitted as an advocate in February of 2020, just before COVID hit. Mm-hmm. Just before COVID hit. I was getting briefed. Life was going well. COVID hit. I'm home now again. There's no work. There's nothing. Oh, it was so difficult. It was so, so, so difficult. During the peak of the pandemic, my partner then says to me, I'm a person that gets bored. I need to keep busy. I need to keep busy. So he says to me, why don't you do this? Why don't you open your own company? And then the passion of being a business woman, because I see it in him. He's a businessman. He does companies, he does branding, he's an all-rounder, he does everything. So he says to me, why don't you do this? Why don't you open your own business and incorporate law into that? I'm like, that's not a bad idea. Mm. And that's when I birthed Batuseng Consulting. It's a case management company where we deal with trust, legal advice, business and professional and medical professional consulting. So that's how I got to where I am now.
So hey, quite a lot has happened. One of the questions I wrote down here was actually specifically on the transition between like high school and not just any high school, a Muslim high school, which on its own is quite already interesting. And then, you know, going to big, bad Joburg, like that transition, which you already explained, after some time, it took you under with the world of partying. How yes. did you just handle being away from a support structure at home? You know, at home, your parents are there. So even if you're a crybaby, you don't have to be the adult. What did that time alone actually really teach you, just looking back? What can you say to a young student right now who's had to transition from basically maybe even a quiet village or a different province, and now they find themselves in Joburg? What kind of advice can you give looking back to that moment?
Okay, so it's important to know where you come from. It's important to know why you came to a different province. Mm. The reason I say that is because once you lose the why you are doing something, the why you came to a different province, then everything will fall apart like it did with me. I forgot why I came to study this side. I forgot where I came from and why I came to this province. I came here, I saw big lights. I saw an opportunity where there's a saying in Sepedi, it says Ramambon, basically, meaning my parents don't see me. They don't see what mm-hmm. I'm doing. I've lost that support. I think I'm an adult now. So instead of realizing why I'm there, I lost it. I lost my whys.
Okay,
so it's very important to remember why you came to a different point, why you are there, and why you're studying what you're studying.
Sure, very important. Yeah, and often being rejected really sometimes it actually works out into making you more of a rebel. How did you actually just stay grounded during the two big times when you're rejected? Firstly, being at UJ, where at the time it was the only varsity you had applied for. And then secondly, at the end of your qualification, there's a betrayal that comes with the, okay, everybody says go to school, after you graduate, you'll find a job. And here you are battling to find a job when your peers have now started working. What has that kind of rejection taught you, and how do you deal with rejection in your adult life?
It taught me it's always important to have a plan B. Always important to have a plan B. I say that because had I applied at more universities, I would have other options. I applied at one university, hence the rejection was so bad for me. And it has taught me that, like I said, always have a plan B. If it doesn't work out, you pick up yourself and you try again. It's always important if you are kicked down, if you fall, you pick up yourself, you like wakitinta, and you're like, what do I do now? As much as it will hurt, but you need to quickly snap back and say, what do I do now?
So here on your bio, it says that Batuseng Consulting is a fusion of law and occupational therapy. How did you get to the occupational therapy side? Is there someone that you partnered with? And what led your interest into that specific field or that specific practice, which is, you know, not so aligned to law?
So with occupational therapy, how my interest came about was when I was serving my articles at Implant Associates. So normally what happens is that we have to, claimants that are involved in accidents, we take them to experts for assessments, and then they do reports based on the injuries they sustained in the accidents. So then they'll send different kinds of reports. It's the industrial psychologist, it's the occupational therapist. And I'll go through those reports. As I go through the reports, I'm like, this is very interesting for me. How do I now merge this interest of mine with the law side? It's already connected, like I said, with the expert reports. We take the reports, go to court, argue with either the plaintiffs or the defendants, attorneys, you know? So then that's where the interest came about. And I met up with one of the experts and I said to them, how does this work? This is what I'm thinking of doing. However, I'm thinking of pursuing a different field than the medical legal. So the expert reports are called medical legal reports, but I'm thinking of pursuing something different, however, still within the same field of OT. Then she explained, following her explaining, I said to her, okay, now I have an understanding. I'm going to do my own research. And I realized that with what I do, the OT side, the law side are combined in a sense of what I do is we work with trusts, right? Once a matter has been settled by attorneys, by in court, basically a draft order is out, and we find that it's a minor child or the person will be unable to manage their finances, it goes into a trust. Once it gets into a trust, a case management company is appointed by the bank. Okay. Once appointed, which my company is on the panel, they appoint us, then we go out to the client's homes, we assess what they need in terms of their medical needs and their environmental needs. So those assessments are done by an occupational therapist.
Okay.
Once that's done, a report is conducted, compiled by our company and sent back to the trust with recommendations in terms of how to assist going forward. Yes, so that's how the OT and what I do came together.
Okay, but when you then say that all of that is also assessed by an OT, is this somebody else in your team or you're also then doing this part?
No. you need to be an occupational therapist in order to conduct the assessments. It's not done by me. So
Okay.
what then I do is I have a relationship with law firms where once a matter has been settled, then they'll speak to me and say, okay, this matter has been settled. We've now sent through, or rather, spoken to this specific bank for the trust is moving to them. Once it moves to them, then now I have a communication. I communicate with them in terms of what do we do next.
Okay. All right. And then you have this interest in occupational therapy, personal injury, some labor law, some medical negligence, and then you incorporate a company that focuses solely on, or rather predominantly on, sports law. How did you get into that? Like, what pursued you to be interested in sports law? And what kind of work does a sports law attorney or legal practitioner dabble in?
Okay, so sports law focuses on sports and athletic activities. So let me tell you how I got into sports law. A friend of mine was studying, she was doing her master's in sports law. Then we were having a conversation. I'm like, why sports law? Then she explained her interest, and while she was explaining her interest, it lit a spark in me. Then we had a conversation about it, and I said, you know what? Funny enough, on Instagram, this is what's happening. I've been noticing a lot of football players who have been losing their houses, who don't have the how do I explain, who don't have the knowledge and skill to say, you know what? Don't do this. While you are in the peak of your career, this is what you need to invest in. This is don't finish your money going out. You need to have a plan for when you are done. So while we're having that conversation, I said, then I came back home. I started watching there's some channel on YouTube where they speak about when they speak to previous football players, where they were mentioning and speaking about their struggles. And I said, huh, that's where the gap is. That's where the gap is, and that's what I'm going to do. So at Batuising Legal, when it comes to sports law, we provide services relating to representing and negotiating on behalf of the athletes or other sports professionals, just not focusing on football. So our services include contract negotiation. So normally we focus on the juniors. So basically 2000 to 2005, yeah, born between 2000 and 2005, that are interested in pursuing football as a career. We get them into trials. If they're good, then they want to sign them up, then we start negotiating their contracts. We provide legal advice to soccer players, to netball players, you know, what to do with them, financial advice. We basically guide them in terms of what to do after their career is basically over, you know. It's very, I don't know, Tibelo, if you watch sports, or are you a soccer fanatic? Do you follow sports?
No, I watch sports in the background of my husband.
Players, they don't know what to do with their money, if I'm being quite honest. Soccer players,
They end
I
up
have,
on I do it.
yes. So I have a friend of mine. I was speaking to him. I'm like, this is what you got. This is the amount of money that you have. What do you do with it? And he says, do I just bought a car? And then he said, no, I just bought a car. I'm going on a trip. I'm like, that's fine. That's good. But what about the rest of the money? What are you doing with the rest of the money? He didn't know. I'm like, why don't you invest, you know, off season? Why don't you do appearances? Why don't you keep yourself alive and relevant to the people?
Mm.
And, oh, okay, that's good. So we give them career guidance in terms of sponsorship opportunities and personal branding, which normally that happens in the off seasons. And it's the financial management where we give them, where we collaborate with financial advisors to help them manage their investments and any other tax obligations. So yes, that's basically what we focus on when it comes to sports law.
Yeah, no, that is so important. You know, immediately when you said you do contract negotiation for people who are failing you in their sporting career, I thought of soccer players. I don't know why they have the reputation that they do when it comes to their finances, but it's also just interesting to then be reminded that there's a whole lot of other stuff that happens in the background of their careers, and their legal affairs being one of the things that can make or break them. You know, if you invest in a lawyer early in your career, the chances of you being cheated or lowballed are significantly slimmer than if you just go into it blindly.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, all right. Yo, and then can we speak about the kind of, what is it? Women in law workshops, women in law empowerment workshops, which you recently launched. And I do understand that there is going to be one hosted in Polokwane very soon after the Joburg one was a huge success. How did you get into that? You know, what inspired you to launch this remarkable initiative aimed at empowering women through legal education, providing them with invaluable information about alternative career paths within the legal sector?
So my interest of coming up with the Women in Law Empowerment Workshop came about when I think Sinako was on the podcast. So I first met Sinako at one of her events, and she was taking us on a tour at the Constitutional Court. And while we were there, I was still studying at the time. I said to myself, I'm going to do this for other women as well. I'm going to get to a point of sending the letter down to other females where they don't know what to do with their careers. They need advice, they need mentorship. I'm going to provide the same thing for females. Actually, I wanted to do that for the females back at home that are within the law fraternity. So that's where the interest sparked. That's where the interest came for me when I was there. I attended another event where I was speaking, and it was females also. And I saw a gap of other females, specifically also UNISA students that wanted to understand how you got here. How did you self-discipline? How did you graduate? Because like I said, it's very difficult studying and striking a balance while studying at UNISA. So that's where my interest of helping and launching the Women in Law Empowerment Workshop came about. So it's basically to provide them with information about alternative careers. You don't have to become an attorney and work at a law firm. You don't have to become admitted and practice. You don't have to focus on personal injury claims or medical negligence or the norm. There's so much within the law field that you can do. Hence, yourself, you know, hence the other women that were speaking on the panel that day.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one specific field. What we try to do is get different females in different career paths to motivate them, not and to say this is not what you need to focus on. This is not the only sector that you can follow. There's so many other sectors, there's so many other fields that you can focus on and have an interest in. There's sports law, you know. Yes, it's a lot of females, specifically females, they don't know about such career paths that they can take. And the reason I'm focusing mainly on females is because what happened for me is that when I go to court, Tebello, a lot of men's paid planning would happen. They would just look at you coming and see this small girl and be like, ah, this one doesn't know what she's doing. Ah, this one, she's a pretty face. I'm like, oh, okay. If women stood their ground and were able to be strong and say, I got here the same way you got here. I deserve to be here. And we are going to fight. I'm going to get in there and you're not going to do what you're doing to me outside.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Ikdumeleng. I always say that I honestly wish that at the time that I was embarking on this journey, I had access to the amount of information that is available now, you know, through the work that you and I do, through this podcast itself. I wish I had learned ahead of time that it wasn't black and white. Like, I didn't either have to just be, you know, a practicing attorney or an advocate. I wish I had known that there were so many other things I could pursue with my degree. I mean, even when you're explaining all the occupational therapy work that you do, there are so many fields that I always say that we can, like cross-reference each other, if I can put it that way. Earlier on this season, I was interviewing a lady from Nigeria who said she had a huge interest in, she was a designer basically before she then started doing law full-time. And I thought to myself, there's a whole industry called fashion law, and it predominantly works on the intellectual property behind designs and basically the legal side of fashion. And I just thought we actually can have two worlds coexist that aren't necessarily related to each other, but work hand in hand with one another.
Exactly.
So this kind of information wasn't readily available to us at that time. So a lot of the time we spent being, well, sulking about, yo, this one specific thing didn't work out in this way that we thought. That means that it's the end of our career in law, it's the end of our dreams. Meanwhile, there would have been so many other avenues that we could have pursued and used our legal degrees or our degrees in law to tap into that industry.
Yeah.
All right. So as we come to an end, Ikdumeleng, is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't asked you? Is there anything, you know, a few words of motivation for young women? Anything interesting that you've learned in the previous or in recent weeks that you'd like to share with us before I let you go?
Yes. So I've written down just some key points for everyone to take with them. So it's basically tips for navigating any career. They need to find what you love. Find what you love. And if you haven't figured that out, it's fine. It's really okay. As time goes by, you will get there. You know, I say this because you find matriculants, they almost done and they don't know. I've gotten so many DMs saying, Idu, I'm almost done with my matric. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to study. And then they ask me, is it okay if I take a gap year? I'm like, nah, I don't know, but you need to really figure out what you love. It's very important to do what you love. And it's also okay that if you become an attorney and you're like, this is not for me. I want to work at the bank and become a trust consultant. I have a law degree. I'm going to work at the bank. That's fine. You know, it's not always, doesn't come to your passion, doesn't come to you at a first try. You can try. Like I said, you fall and you're like, I don't like this. Then you pick yourself up and you find something else that you love doing. Secondly, remember that your career is in your hands. Remember the why. Why you're studying what you're studying and why you're studying in a different province if you are. Upskill yourself, apply for vacation work, offer services on return for a recommendation letter, because most law firms will say, nope, we're not paying you. So even if it's for a letter, it adds value to your CV. So a recommendation is very important. It also upskills your knowledge, you know, because you'll be getting experience from lawyers who have been in the field for many years. And lastly, it's important to strike a balance between our professional life and our home life and you as being a human being. So we all, a friend of mine was saying that she advocates for a lovely, well-rounded and fully life. So I say that as well, that strike a balance, focus on living and your professional life, like strike that balance and have a good support system as well, which is very important. Like we were saying before we started recording, that take your kids somewhere during the holidays, you know?
Yeah, to their grandparents. Like
grandparents and relax, you know, take time to read a book. What works for you? Our experience is unique, and it's important to find what works for you, what system works best for you.
Sure. Thank you so much, Itumeleng, for those nuggets. We have unfortunately come to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for availing yourself and for sharing your story with us, for giving us insights into the type of the work that you do, and for your commitment to empowering women. You are exactly the type of woman we celebrate on this podcast. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dwala.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your week, Dumi.
You too.